unfortunately, in Ghana, when people start doing well, so-called friends, so-called people all of a sudden just start acting up. We have it in us to be great. Mm. I live here. I stay here. Yes, I do get a chance to travel. When you get a chance, travel, meet people, be in a position to learn. The moment you start focusing on the 99 reasons why you should stop what you're doing, you have to be reminded of the one reason that keeps you going. The first learning word, if you want to be an entrepreneur, is that word sacrifice. It's such a huge word. It comes with...
What are you telling the young ones who are saying, I don't have any cash, but I really want to start this business? Mm-hmm. What should they do?
I think that they need to be able to...
Entrepreneurial success looks glamorous from the outside, but what really happens behind the scenes? In this episode, we sit down with Kweku Bediako, CEO of Chocolate Clothing, as he pulls back the curtain on his journey, sharing hard-earned lessons, past mistakes, and the secrets that shaped his success. If you're an aspiring entrepreneur, this is the insight you've been waiting for.
In life, there's a time to learn, teach, earn. People just want to know that success is the beautiful Mercedes you're driving, but they don't want to do what it takes to get that Mercedes.
Hey, you're welcome to Connected Minds podcast. My name is Derek, and thank you so much for being a support to this whole vision of trying to change the mindset of people and make people understand that it is possible and we have that seed within us. Today's conversation is going to be a really nice one. And I think you should buckle up and, you know, get your fingers ready because you're about to leave some comments below. Yeah. Leave some comments below. I'm going to have a conversation with Kweku Bediako. And he's the CEO and founder of Chocolate Clothes Global. Now, he's also done something fantastic, which I really like. Another business called Junkies. He's a co-founder of that business. And, you know, I will let him talk about the story of how that business came about, which I think you're going to love. You know, I was watching a video of Steve Harvey, and he was talking about, as a matter of fact, the first question he asked on Family Feud was, do you know chocolate? And I thought the person was going to say, yeah, everyone knows chocolate. We eat chocolate. But straight away, that guy's mind went onto you as a brand, which I thought was fantastic. And because what Steve was then later going to talk about was the clothes you made for him. You're doing fantastic, my brother. How are you doing?
I'm great and blessed. And thanks to Dirty December, I've lost my voice, but now we are clean. Now we are clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
But how are you? Like, how are you feeling?
I feel blessed, man. I feel really blessed. I feel we've been through a lot, you know?
Yeah.
We've been through a lot. But it gets to a point where you get reminded of what the vision is. You get to a point where you understand that, you know, I was telling you yesterday that success for me is not a destination. It's the journey. It's the process.
Yeah.
And so you get reminded to quickly toughen up and move to gear two, gear three, gear four. So, you know, first of all, blessed. It's a new year. Mm. If irrespective of all the craziness last year was, it's just last year.
Right.
Right. And we as a business, we as a brand, we still continue to grow. We still continue to empower. We still continue to build, create. It's a real blessing. And
fantastic.
You know, I'd like to shout out, big up God for that.
Mm.
Yes. Mm,
fantastic.
I'm a very spiritual person too.
A lot of my audience were like, okay, a lot of people you speak with have been abroad, you know, they've made the money there and then they've moved to Ghana. So business is working. It's fantastic, right? So they want me to speak to someone who has done it from here. And I think one of the people I spoke with about that was Coach Osobo.
Mm.
You know, yes. Same as yourself, right? But I think they didn't think that was enough.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted more.
Oh, there are more of us.
Plenty.
There are plenty of us. But again, I feel like, anyways, please.
Yeah, plenty. So I think for you, your story and what you've built with the brand that you have it's amazing to share that conversation and then share the mindset and the success principles, the process that you went through. Now, I guess my first question would be, what prompted you to start a clothing brand?
Well, first of all, shout outs to all your audience, man, and your podcasters and your, you know, I mean, you're doing a fantastic job yourself. Hopefully, one of these days I'll be the guy interviewing and you'll be in my position.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah. You know, what prompted me? It's just so many different things. I think I was born a creative. I started cartoon characters and sketching caricatures when I was a baby, when I was a kid. And I always knew that that was where my love was. I remember as far back as in GSS1, you know, in my university, in my primary school, I went to university primary school. Shout out to Mr. Tego. I quite remember I was asking him, why is it that there's a science club, football club, girl guides and all that, but we don't have any arts club? So that was... And, you know, he was like, arts club. I was like, yes, we need to gather like-minded people like us and figure out how we can sort of build our own sort of ideas, share ideas and all that. So as far back as GSS1, I helped in creating an arts club in my GSS. And I remember when I was in Form 3 as well, 2 years after, you know how when, back in the day when you're done with school, so you have like a t-shirt or a book that shows here in Ghana, oh, like Kwekubidia Kong alias, you know, K Bizzle, or maybe, you know, whatever, Charles Kwao, AKAs, whatever. I wanted to take it another step further. So what I did was I picked up like different caricatures and I sketched faces of all my mates. So behind our t-shirts was kind of like a mockery of your face, but still looks like you, right? I had graded, did all that for my, I think we were about 52 people in class. I did that for everybody with caricature images and had your name, actually your nickname.
Right.
Not even your real name, your nickname. So your dad and mom will know how we call you in school. You know, so I guess I've always been a creative individual. When I was about writing BEC and I was getting ready to go to secondary school, I had a little fallout with my parents because, again, I was like, Charlie, me, I'm trying to do visual arts. So. And they're like, okay, you can do visual arts, but then you will commute from the streets, you know?
Because that was not in line.
Oh, my parents, that was definitely not in line. My parents are professors. I mean, I delve more into my parents, I'm sure. But everyone in my family, I'm the last out of 5 kids. Everyone had red signs. I was not going to be the odd one out. The same measure had to be given to all kids so that at maybe post-university, you can do whatever you want to do. But from the time you're a kid to university, all the kids had to be given the same opportunity.
Right.
Which I think was phenomenal, man. So I went to Achimoto School to go read science. But I was still sketching on the side. So fast forward, again, went to university, read information systems and archaeology. And there, you know, I switched. I was writing music, poetry, movies. Every experience of a field trip we'll have with an archaeology class, I'll come back with a movie script.
Okay.
all of that. So I always knew I was going to end up in the arts, the creative field.
Yeah. So the path that your parents thought you were going to take, you were like, nah, that's not what is boiling inside of you. And then you eventually carved your own path.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think my parents would definitely have a plan for their kids.
Right.
I think they knew that at a very early age, I had this talent. Actually, when I was 13, I drew my dad. So currently, if you go to my parents' house, you see a full-blown picture, an A2, A1 size of my dad when I was 13, celebrating one of his birthdays. So they knew it. you know, just search out stuff, go and show it to them. They always knew that I had an interest in this. But I guess what they wanted to do was to hone it out gradually. You can't just give a six-year-old kid that shows prospects in soccer, just go and put him in a soccer school just like that.
Yeah, because it's a game of chance.
It's a game of chance. If he breaks his leg, that's it. You know, now I have so many friends in the U.S. particularly who were destined, for example, to play basketball. And then they broke their leg. Or they broke a shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, and today they literally, if it wasn't the solid education they had,
they would have nothing to fall back on.
Yes, there'll be nothing to fall back on, you know. So for me, I doff my hat definitely to my parents because, you know, what do you do when you have a very passionate kid, stubborn kid, you know, the black sheep? Well, clearly, that's why I'm wearing black. how do you manage, you know, the expectation of that kid at that young age? Today, I've got kids. So, you know, it's always a balance
right.
between interests, plan. How do I still fuel what you're doing, but still make sure that you understand that you need to have the full glare image of what life looks like, although you might not understand now, but eventually this is literally the angle that you need to be looking at it from.
So, but do you think sometimes our parents get scared for our future?
Yes, they do.
Financially.
Yes,
well.
They do.
So that's why they want to steer us into a certain path, right? Because that's what they know.
I think it's not. So yes, it's a fear. Two, there's also their sacrifice.
Right.
Because there's a lot of sacrifice. I mean, you're a parent as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's so many different, like you cannot function. In fact, the first learning word, if you want to be an entrepreneur, parents, adults, is that word sacrifice. And sacrifice comes with, it's such a huge word. It comes with its perks. And it also comes with its own situation as well. What would you do if, let's say, you tipped the guy who washed your car, let's say 100 cities. How would you feel the next time you go back, he sees you and just walks off? How would you feel?
I would feel he didn't appreciate what I did.
Thank you very much. So it's a similar situation that, you know, growing up as an adult, you work, you earn an income. There's so much you could have used that money for. But today, school fees, extracurricular, daddy, my shoe is spoiled. Mommy, I'm hungry. I'm going for a field trip. I want to go and visit this person. Do you know how much money our parents actually put in us? And now I'm feeling it because I'm a dad.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So when you do all of this, and the idea here is that you can't necessarily tell another being what to do. But by mere fact that the person is your kid, it seems that you can. Till you have yours.
Huh.
Till you have yours. And you realize that, Charlie, that's another being. They are another being. They have their own mindsets. They have how they think, how they move, all of that, period. And so, yes, you might have an idea. Okay, that, hey, today when I left home, I knew I was coming to see Derek. Okay, let me go and have a haircut. Come here. Who knows? I could have sparked the car and the car wouldn't work. So I'd have probably had to jump on my bike, which is literally what I did today. I was supposed to be here for, let's say, 12. But because of that hitch and the mechanic delayed, at least to hand over the car, I'm here. So there's always, it's a similar route where you give birth to your kid. You know that, wow, I've built this sort of bit. This is all I knew. You know, my parents' situation. My dad was the first person in his village to go to university. And the only reason why, and you know, he was able to do that was he loved the science. He explored it into its barest minimum, excelled at it. And thanks to that, today, he's the first person in his village who's put up a concrete building.
Wow.
you know, years ago, when we were kids, we used to go there years ago, was the first person. So if this is what has helped him, and he knows that, well, this is what he does, this is what our mom also does. Because my dad is a plant pathologist. My mom is a botanist, right? Both in the science field. And so they know that this is what has worked. This is what was the differentiation factor between them and other kids that they grew up with in the village.
Right.
Who may not be as successful as they are. So now the question you ask yourself is that, why would you birth your kid and then just by virtue of the fact that he thinks that he's good at arts, you would just, okay, go and do whatever you want to do. Hey. And, you know, back in the day too, the arts wasn't well fleshed out like today. There was no social media.
Absolutely. So that's where we're going to then turn the clock a bit.
Okay.
And talk about, at which point did you say, I want to start the brand?
So when I finished university, I knew that I was not good. I was done with science, Charlie. I've done what I can with science. I would love to apply it. But what I genuinely wanted to do was to be within the confinement of the creative arts. So initially, I met this man, Mr. Hammond, big ups to him, because we used to hang out and play chess together. So in my mind, I thought we were going to discuss how to do, like, how we can come up with an events brand in chairs and other stuff. You know, back in uni, I was throwing parties with friends, making some extra money on the side. Like, how maybe we can explore that. Only to find out that he worked for a marketing communication firm, quite particularly Charterhouse. And so when I went to meet his boss, you know, who is one of my biggest bosses, called Mr. Philip Ayesu, who was the general manager for Multiple Concepts, which was the advertising wing of Charterhouse. It was like, I thought, okay. Anyways, let me see what this is about. Apparently it was about, okay, well, this is a potential job. I'm done with uni. Can I do my national service here? So it got me to research more about advertising.
Okay.
And so, you know, there was another firm that had been built. I thought Charterhouse was great, but I thought, okay, hey, if I could start from a smaller place, I could learn faster because I have more access to the bosses and learn what advertising is all about. So, you know, I worked at a place called Brands and Products. I worked at a place called Brands and Products. And it was more of marketing communication, not just advertising. And within, I was there for about 5 to 6 years. But by my first year, I fully grasped what this industry was about, which fed into my creative arts.
What was it though? What
graphic designing?
What is it inside of you that made you say, okay, this is an opportunity to learn? And you basically went in, and within a year you've grabbed everything.
It was an idea company.
Okay.
It was an idea company. And ideas, I have a whole lot of ideas. We've not even started. So I was like, what do they mean by ideas? And you walk in, and then you'll be given a brand, like a business. Like we had so many different clients. I quite remember we got a shot with Voltic. At that time, Voltic had just been acquired by SAB Miller. So they had some good budget. And then they were like, well, it's Nkrumah's birthday. We need to do an ad for Nkrumah and put it on prints, on billboards, TVCs. What can we do? I quite remember sitting down with our copywriter then, called Ellis Arthur. And we're brainstorming, you know, till late, almost about 1 a.m. And, you know, an idea of how, you know, when you go to an elderly man's house, you show respect by leaving your slippers outside. If you're wearing a hat, you take it off. So, you know, kind of an idea of how we could take off the cover of a bottle and have it sort of slant like you're taking it off the hat, right, to show a level of respect. Like, hey, today we are doffing our hats. Today we're taking our hats off for our leader. Great idea. And I realized that, oh my goodness, that it brought out a different part of me. We did that for so many different brands. Club Beer, you know, the time we picked up Club Beer had a 27% market share. Club was late 60s, 60, almost 70% market share. You know, the research I did and the team did to understand what cloud beer and why cloud beer was not penetrating too much into the markets, why the youth were shying away from that. Because a good amount of youth was drinking Star. So we were tasked to come up with ideas. So again, you fed into, no, the bottle has to be greener. It has to look like green. It means richness. It has to look cold, chilled, sweating. It's almost like, oh my goodness. Like if, when I'm thirsty, I'm not even thinking water. I'm thinking club beer, not any beer. You know, how do we make the bottle a bit more upright? So when people see the bottle, they can relate to it like, oh, this is an upstanding brand or product. So all of these were just brought out a certain aspect of me because I could relate. That's how I am.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, eventually, you know, we put all that, those ideas into a campaign, started adding elements of who we are as Ghanaians, words like chale, kwe, lungu, lungu. You know, how do we apply that? Ideas like, can you imagine, like, when you're going to, like, when I was coming here, and I said, like, I'm biking, right? Imagine you were showing, you were giving me directions, and you were like, well, when you get to AH Hotel, you see a lady selling plantain. Go past her. There's another woman selling granite. Take the first right, and another left.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. And then when you get to the last house, ask for where you are going. That was like one of the, you know, that's very Ghanaian. But your idea, the idea to bring that in and then form a connection with a Ghanaian brand or a Ghanaian beer, it creates a certain humor and a certain connection with the audience. Hey, Charlie, hey, but these people, they're power. I remember last week I was going somewhere and that was how the person actually was describing where I was going. Okay. Everybody could relate to it.
Right.
So being in an idea company for me was a wake-up call that, oh, wow, like, there's something like that. So all these ideas that I have, I can put it into something.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was the...
Because that part of your brain had been heavily activated.
Oh, totally. But there was nowhere to apply it. Nowhere to apply it. Like, if you have an idea as a young student, who will listen?
Did you start off with money or with no money?
Hey, I was broke. I was broke.
A lot of people say that it is not possible to start a business without money.
My salary was 200 cedis.
As a matter of fact, a lot of people who comment on these content, they say that they ask the question, how do you start a business without money? How did you do it?
So for me, again, so I was on a 200 cedi salary before it got bumped to 500 cedis. In a week, that money would finish. And, you know, in my case, again, you know, again, I will shout out my parents, my mom, my dad. You know, as I said, I was very stubborn. And so when I decided to do this, yeah, there was a bit of pushback for my parents. And so my stipend that was being paid to me got cut off.
Okay.
So that means that the only thing I had was my 200 and 500 Ghana cedi salary. And, you know, I think that people need to understand that you are successful because you think and you practice success.
Where did you get that concept from?
It's always been me. It's always been me. Like, you know, how do I justify this? Five kids, all my siblings are coming first in their class. Then you show up fifth or sixth or seventh. How can you be in the same house? You understand? So there was a lot of good pressure or good aspiration. But I'd always moved in my, I'd always been organic with right. that. It never affected me. I still definitely do respect and I appreciate my siblings so much. What I don't know, I'll go to them for help. What they didn't know, because again, I was a social guy. So when, for example, someone, like there was a story when I remember my big brother came to my class because there was a specific type of felt pen that was on the market. And there was actually some guy in my class that had brought that. No, some guy in another class that I knew had that type of felt pen, but had created some illusion of that person. And I remember my brother coming to my class to come and ask for that person. Mr. Ibrahim, I'm looking for Toga. Like, there's nobody here called Toga. Ah, he's mixed race. His mom is Egyptian, his dad is Togolese. There's nobody called. And I'm sitting there looking at my brother. I'm like, what's my brother doing here?
Yeah. And that was you?
No, that was an illusion of someone.
That you created?
That I created, yeah. That's class two.
Wow.
That was class two, yeah. So I was the guy that knew everybody.
Your mind has been very busy.
For oh, Charlie. Like in the area, maybe my mom's car won't spark. She has to go somewhere. Oh, at age 7, 8, 9, I knew literally everybody in the area.
Now,
so I'll go and call someone. Mom, I go get a car fixed. My mom was like, but how do you know this almost 40-year-old guy? Ah, he's my friend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, so were you telling the young ones who are saying, I don't have any cash, but I really want to start this business.
Mm-hmm.
What should they do?
I think that they need to have they need to be able to break down what they want to do.
Okay.
Not every single thing is cash. And I say this because I'm a living example of that. When I started the idea of chocolate, I was doing it after work. So some of my lunch breaks, I'll meet up certain clients that wanted stuff. And after work, which was not your ideal work, working closing time, because you're supposed to close work at 6, but sometimes you work till about 8, 9. What I first started doing was there were a lot of tailors within that salon down in Adabraka, Odona. So I'll go around, meet up with them, sit in their shop. You know, they'll hear you. Maybe they think you're coming to sew. I'll sit down with them, we'll crack jokes, learn more about what they were doing. And then eventually, if they needed any help, because I've been there maybe day one, day two, I'm back, day three, I'm back. It almost looks like, oh, guy, be boy, make a crack.
Right.
You know, so I learned a little bit of what I didn't finish. Because my mom, again, when we were growing up, my mom bought us all of our sewing kits. So we started learning how to sew when we were kids, but it wasn't my forte. I never really liked it. But now that I knew that by then I started designing for my sister, she was taking stuff to her seamstress. It wasn't coming out the way I wanted it. Can I have a shot at it and see how best I can tweak it to how I had wanted it? How do I start that? I need to polish it up. How do I polish it up? Next door tailor can help me figure that one out. So within 6 months, I had figured out what was possible in terms of an idea to production and what wasn't. And then the first thing I started also doing was like, Charlie, enti seminya ubi size bar, ubi tinya pam. So now the first thing I did was that, who do I know? Oh, that's the marketing manager for, let's say, Fan Milk, who we will go and have meetings with. He wears some African prince B. The next time I go talk to him. Chief, I have a present for you. And one good thing too was that I was also very good at what I'm good at, which is I'm able to eyeball people and figure out sizes.
You did that with Steve Harvey.
Yeah, and a whole lot of different people. So many people. It still does happen. Yeah. Anyways, I'm sure we'll get back to it. That part of the conversation. So, you know, either I'll have the ones I couldn't, I'm like, chief, when you're coming to work, please come with your shirts. Then maybe we'll replicate the size. Some of them I'll do a guesswork. This guy's like a large. So I'll go buy like some 20 CD, 30 CD fabric. So it's, but the design and then the aesthetic is just very, very different. You know, did that for my former bosses, some of our brand managers, some of my sister's friends, some of my friends. And then gradually, they wear the shirts, they take it out, they come back. Charlie, the shirt you do for me, nice. Oh, how much was it? Oh, Chairman, 80 Ghana. Oh, bring me 3 more.
Okay.
Hey, 240 Ghana. 2.4 million. You know? So I guess that was literally how I started. I had to picky bang on my talent, what I knew I was good at. What I knew I wasn't good at, I would ask for help. So then I steered this till eventually, I guess, you know, I got the chance to get like my first store, which was around Wager, SEC. At that time, President Kufuor had built like a whole village for Abosiyokan workers. And they said they were not going to leave Abosiyokan. So there were huge stores going for like 50 Ghana city, other cities. So I took advantage, got two of those stores, then started, got in one shoemaker who also needed some place, started making shoes. And then one tailor who had met, Charlie, what can you do? You can do whatever you want to do, but I'll also be bringing stuff to you. And the rest is history.
How long has it taken you? How long has it taken you to get from starting to where you are right now?
A good 12 years, almost 13 years. But I keep on saying that the idea of it is as old as me being born.
And all the things in between, I mean, listening to you very carefully, you've calculated, you've worked, you've been resilient, you've been at this.
I've been active.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, 12, 13 years. But it's not even about the number of years, if you ask me. It's the attitude. It's the attitude. The attitude of not buying into some fake perception of how doing it actually is. People like the idea of things getting done.
Mm.
You don't like the idea of doing it.
Talk to me.
People just want to know that success is the beautiful Mercedes you're driving. But they don't want to do what it takes to get that Mercedes. And, you know, although social media has been a great tool for us, it's also been it gets a lot of us not to focus on the process. You know, I started off by saying that for me, success is not a destination. It's not a point. It is the process. You know, success is like marriage. Success is like a relationship. You know, what's the name of your best friend?
Eddie.
When was the last time you and Eddie had a fight?
Maybe about an argument.
An argument.
Oh, maybe about a month or two ago.
Great. Is he still your best friend?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Right? So, like, the best relationships for me is that there will be exchanges. There will be difference.
But
that's literally what success is. That's what business is. I'm relating it back to business. That at the end of the day, it's the ups and downs. Do you understand? It's not the profits that defines the business. You know, like COVID. You know, I was going to use some opportunity to talk about junkies as well. Look at COVID. COVID happened.
Mm.
We had no control over it. Doesn't mean that business was not needed. But your ability to forecast, your ability to, when you don't even forecast and things happen, what do you do? Do you just give up? Okay, this year I've not made nothing. So what happens? Am I just going to give up? No. Can you then use that insight to rebuild another? And that's literally what happened with two of my friends and myself.
I was going to get into it, but since you started, talk to us about junkies. Yeah, I mentioned in the beginning.
Yeah, no, but big ups to Maxwell. Today's actually his birthday. Yo, big ups, Max. and then Kwame Na Hazel. I've known Kwame Na like more than 30 years. And Max I met maybe like 15, 16 years ago. But long story short is we always knew that we were built for something big. We've been friends, family, camaraderie. Like our relationship is very different. And unfortunately in Ghana, like when people start doing well, so-called friends, so-called people all of a sudden just start acting up. I don't know why, envy, jealousy, whatever it is. But particularly these two guys were like even supporting me even the more. So we always knew that, no, we need to get together and do something. So during COVID, all of us were just bored. At least Kwame now, he works in the mines and the mining industry, you know, handles drones and all of that. And during COVID, because the country was shut down, a lot of the contracts were now given internally. So he was a little bit busy sometimes, but a few times he was in Accra, we'll get a chance to link up. Charlie, what can we do? What can we do? And eventually we're like, but people, they are getting tired of cooking. You see, it's one thing if you cook once in a while. But now you are confined to a space and you have to cook every day. There's an insight that people get tired. How about we're able to supply food to them? And that's literally what started Junkies, which is like now one of the biggest beggar joint food truck businesses. But, you know, yeah. So
COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
Clothing would not exactly, well, it wasn't seen as an essential service.
Right.
Food.
People definitely were having Zoom in their boxes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Food mm-hmm. was an essential service.
Totally.
Three men sat down and started brainstorming on what you guys can do.
What are we going to do?
And you came up with a
Came up with so many different recipes. In fact, it was different food options. And then the beggar was resonating more with a lot of friends of ours. We started tweaking it based on good feedback we got and tweaking it, good constructive bits. And then afterwards, we're like, okay, good. Now it's September. Then maybe we should chalk and plan for December. People were like, hey, no. They want some for lunch tomorrow and the next. And then, you know, again, at that point, we're doing delivery, courier. Got to a point where we realized that that was a very, it's a different type of conversation. So we had to rejig it a little bit. We thought things through, looked at the McDonald's model, and we're like, you know what? It's too crazy to start real estate. So let's start food trucks. People had tried and failed. We're like, no, we're not going to fail. We're going to build the biggest food business in the world from Africa that falls on food trucks. We're able to move to your destination and be fixed at a location as well. And then, so, yes. And people have never tasted a street burger that tastes so gourmet at the same time. They've never tasted a reimagined burger.
So the description someone gave me was that it's the best burger in Accra right now.
Oh, it's not even about right now.
Like, no, but and then I said, okay, I need to try it, man.
No, you have to. You have to. It's burger reimagined. You lived in London, so you know how a lot of burgers could taste like. But we've applied a lot of interesting principles in there, considering our palates. Considering the fact that everybody calls burgers and fast food as junk, but we wanted to reimagine what junk means. So for us, it's not just too junk. There's a lot of health into that. A lot of interesting local spices that makes it very healthy as well, healthier as compared to a lot of the others. And I mean, you just have to taste it. And maybe we need to get the whole team on here to speak more about it.
But. Yeah. See, sometimes when you're running a business, it can get tough.
Totally.
It can get, to you, you're great at networking and meeting up with people. So for you, there may be opportunities every now and then, right? Even when things look like it's becoming difficult, you may be involved in a conversation that lifts you back up again.
Mm-hmm.
How lonely has the road been for you?
How lonely?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, as I said, you know, and relating this back to what I said earlier, it's you can't even afford to focus on that. You can't even focus because the moment you start focusing on the 99 reasons why you should stop what you're doing, you have to be reminded of the one reason that keeps you going. So to hell with being lonely. That's your problem. People genuinely don't care about whether or not you are lonely or you don't have money to pay this. You don't. No. That shouldn't be the focus. As to when I was coming here, whether there was traffic or not, I would have still come here.
Mm.
If there was potholes on the road, I would have still come here. If I was stopped by the police and I would talk to them, I would still show up here. You know, so for me, it's more than just the loneliness, which does get a lot because a lot of people don't understand entrepreneurs, let alone understand creative entrepreneurs. You know, we are palettes. We are very, very different. We are different. We are resilient in a different way. We move in a different way. You know, even friendship sometimes even becomes a problem. You know, because your perception on things are different. You know, when you hit a certain stride, you know, how you even go about it even becomes a problem. Even got to a point when I'm even at a wedding and I'm dancing, people think I don't have problems. Like, it gets really, really lonely. It gets very weird. But as I said, it's one of the 99 reasons why, if you feed into that, you will stop. You know.
But how do you keep yourself going in the midst
of that? One reason.
Huh?
That one reason. The process. The success. The impact. The impact. You know. Sure, we'll delve into other areas and I'll describe what impact is to me. But for me, growing up in a home where everyone read signs and almost you were seen as a black sheep. Well, in both a good way and bad way at the same time. My whole fuel was to prove me right. Like, I can never ever say I wanted to prove my parents wrong. Never. Hey, they're beautiful. I can't. But the crux for me was to prove me right. And then being proven right is not just, I'm successful because I've made clothes for this president. No. It's a consistent thing. Okay, now I've made clothes for the president. Question, president of where? Okay, where is he governing? Okay, can you influence certain policies? Can you influence certain things that will bring more impact? How can I communicate? Because I have one-on-ones with all these influential people. How do I communicate a certain problem to this person? Because I'm the one who's putting clothes on the person. It gets that personal. So you'd be surprised that I'll say certain things to certain people and it gets done in a certain way, but millions of people have said it in the office and it doesn't fall on those ears. Such an honor is such a blessing. And so for me, till the world becomes generally transformed and my kids will be safe, my friends will be doing well, so that we can all pull up in our Ferraris and go for a long road trip to Egypt. You know, we are not stopping. Because the journey is still ongoing. And then afterwards, even when we get older, the question is, how are we now passing on the baton? So yes, there are a lot of reasons for why, like, if you're not dedicated to the relationship, you're not dedicated to the friendship, if you're not dedicated to the marriage, there are so many different reasons why you will quit. So many reasons why you will quit. Do you understand? But because we are very clear with the vision and it's a continuous thing, you know, that there's no better feeling when you find out that maybe, let's say, one of your workers, let's say, has given birth. Next minute you know, maybe his or her kids start school.
Right.
And let's say your business is able to pay for the school fees. So that the worker will have peace of mind.
To work.
Hey. No. Trust me. It's better than going to a Chinese restaurant. You know. So for me, success is impact. Impact is success. We started defying these odds from the house. Charity started from home. And today, there's so many different cousins of mine, so many nephews, nieces of mine, that maybe their parents were not in accordance with them, you know, having an option.
Yeah.
You know, because again, you know, back in the day, arts was not an option. So now, but to be doing arts and applying the science and applying the social ethics and then every bit to build it in such a global way. Hey.
Do you think to be able to be successful, you must create your own space and try to be yourself and bring what you have out despite what you might face?
I'm a firm believer of that. And actually, that's my mantra. Be you, be different. I'm extremely comfortable within myself. I'm a very comfortable person, given that I'm a very different person. You know, when I was growing up, And even a couple of years before, some of my friends, people are fond of that. Why? Because we've normalized all the things that we know are wrong. No, I won't do it. I won't do it. If I don't believe in it, I won't do it. And if you can't have us have a conversation about it so that you get the perspective, okay, that's fine. The funny thing is that in the next few months to a year to 2-3 years, whatever, I mean, if you are pompous and pride, that's you. But the realness will come out. And so we should stand up for who we are. You know, our gut feelings, our essence, our who we are really goes a long way in shaping up the businesses that we are building. You know, if it was that easy, the norm would have run the show.
Mm.
If it was that easy. So for someone to get up and go like, no, I firmly believe in this. I think that if I do X, Y, Z in this way, I'll be successful at it. But yes, welcome the different perspectives. It doesn't mean it has to make you different. It just is like basically how maybe you go to a washing bay. You know the new washing bays where the car is driving but it's getting washed?
Yep, yep.
That's literally what it is. So taking the foam, taking the brush, taking the water and everything is not there to spoil your car. It's just helping you to clean out, have different perspective, see how best you can include that in your script, your direction. But it starts with you. A couple of months ago, one of my very good big brothers, Prince Etonam, shout outs to you, Chief. He said, we're having a conversation, and he said something about anybody's goat is nobody's goat. Anybody's goat is nobody's goat. Essentially, let's assume it was raining, and let's not use a goat, a dog, and there wasn't clarity on where this dog is from, who the dog is. Is it your dog? And it starts raining. I will assume it's your dog. You assume it's my dog. So the rain will beat that dog.
Mm.
Bringing this thing back, if you're not firm with your direction, firm with who you are, how different you are, you'll be blown in anywhere. If anything comes, you are in there. No. Yes, maybe I'll be seeing a lot during parties, during events, during stuff. People think I'm partying. Well, there's that. And there's also how I know that is where the meat is. I'm networking there. There's certain people who've had such significant roles in my life. I can't miss their events. I'll be there from morning to evening. Even if I'm late, I will stay till the last person. And it looks as if this guy, why doesn't he have anything to do? Why is he dancing like that? No, 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 no. We are there for a purpose. I embrace who I am. I know how the impact that I have on the people around me. So yes, I won't show up and be a Kofi. I'm a proper Kweku. Yeah.
What mindset have you stuck with that has helped you so far?
Mindset, wow. Well, maybe I'll start first, God first. God first, because Chief, I've been through so much ups and downs. I've been in situations where there was so much impossibilities, and just that quick word of prayer changed everything. So again, feel free and do whatever that you're doing. It's a free world, but let's not forget that there's a spiritual essence or element that keeps us going. And so for me, the God factor is number one. Number two is, I keep on saying that think big, start small, move fast. Now, a lot of people, as I said, I talked about wanting to be successful without going through the process.
Mm.
I think as big as it gets, huge as it gets, if it's not big, I'm not thinking it. But once you think it and you know that you've thought it, it means it's possible.
Right.
You need to start small. Because sometimes we are so quick. We want change. We want it fast. And I used to be that person. I used to be that person that was always, you know, I'm always fidgeting. I always want this now. No. You realize that it's a process. Whatever you do, you will need others buy-in. You need to be accommodative. You need to factor in all the verticals, all the variables, and all the auxiliaries as well. And so to start, you take your time. Oh, this is what I've done. What do you think? Not because in your head. And that's one of our biggest problems.
Ego.
The ego is way too much.
Yeah.
The fact that you've been pampered at home, that's your home. You know, we need to learn to acknowledge people that have gone through
the mail.
Charlie, that's the only way people meet you in town. And instead of them to, you know, shout outs to the few of, you know, people that I meet. They'll come on, Kweku, thank you, you're doing such a good job. I mean, it means a lot to me when I hear that. Right. Others are full of ego. They think that they can even do bigger and better. So what you've done, Krayano, I don't even know. It'd be hype. Hey, okay, you come. You come. No, we need to understand that you start small after you thought big. You just don't start, you just don't think big and just do. No. It goes through a process. You came to meet certain people in the industry. Find a way of acknowledging them. Find out what their journey has been. It's not as if it's going to be the same journey for you, but it will show up in another way. And then because of the conversations that you keep on having and you're picking here, you're honing here, you're adding it, you're doing this. By the time you're aware, you've gotten to a certain level. And now at that level, you can afford to move fast. You can't skip it. You know, my third thing will be in life, there's a time to learn, a time to teach, and a time to earn. In life, there's a time to learn, teach, earn. And the interesting thing is they are interlocked. Because at your learning stage, you are still... Sorry, at your earning stage, you are still learning.
Mm.
At your teaching stage, you are still learning. At your learning stage, you may be teaching.
Mm.
You know? And, you know, so on and so forth. And so we need to acknowledge this. You can never be successful without learning or having an aspect of teaching and impacting. There's so much issues within our industry when you hear, I've hired this tailor, they've left. Charlie, I put in so much and hired this worker. And it doesn't mean we need to stop. You'd be surprised that in the next 5 years, the person might probably be responsible for another business you create. And then maybe the findings of that person and whatever you instilled in that person is what you are tapping into for that project. So we should never think about the today. We should always be in the position to learn. You know, I don't know if I would like to disclose my age, but I'm still learning. Mm. I've got a 6-year-old boy. I've got a 3-year-old child. I've got so many different friends in 17, 25, 30. I'm always learning.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always learning. And always ready to teach.
Mm.
And irrespective of how much earnings are coming in, you don't become pompous about it. You don't feel like, oh, you've gotten to a point where you are so big that, oh, you can't learn. So when people are telling you stuff, you are going like, I know. Okay.
You know, we are students of life.
Totally.
And when you stop, that's when overtaking happens. And I say this, I've said this a lot, that when you're at a place in your life and you tell yourself, I am complete, I am done. Well, the only other way is down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The only other way is down. But the moment you open up and then you say, well, there's more to learn.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the upside opens.
No, totally. Mm. Totally. And even if I'm going to relate this back to even chocolate, several years we've been running chocolate, and it started out as a very small business, a one-man business. You know, 2019, we chose to try and incorporate it. It's still, you know, playing its own rise and fall, all of that. But then at some point, we realized that it wasn't just the, and you know, we've been to different stages. We started out of doing weddings. I was instrumental in shaping the wedding industry, right, what grooms specifically were wearing. And, you know, although it was a great start, we realized that we had to evolve that conversation, because the bigger vision was to build a lifestyle brand business that would be the biggest in the world.
Right.
That happens to be from here. Like, you hear Prada, do you ask yourself, where's Prada from?
Mm.
No. So that was what we wanted to build. And I felt like we can only do that when we are getting, we can plug in different industries. So yes, we might have started with weddings, but what are we doing in the life, in the casual line? What are we doing with other ceremonial lines? What are we doing in the corporate line, right? And so out of that, we started rethinking, started having new communications. We've never stopped the weddings. We still do the weddings, but just the focus, right? And at some point, 2020, there was a launch of NBA Africa's League, which is a bar. Now, when at that point in time, I was clothing a lot of the top executives in there. So I still hadn't figured out, okay, I'm there for this launch. What were the opportunities? I know that I'm trying to plug in fashion with other industries, but how am I going to go about it? Fast forward, we started having conversations around licensing deals. And this licensing deals was revolving around off-courts, because Nike does the on-court, basketball jerseys and all of that. But what will be the apparel and the merch for the fans? You know, today we have Kakao being the first African brand to be licensed by the BAL, powered by the NBA, NBA Africa.
Yeah. That's my gift.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And, you know, if I wasn't savvy enough and ready to learn and evolve the business, the question you ask yourself is, how do you make kaftans for fans and price it at the level of merch price points? You know, are we able to now explore other areas within the casual line? Sports, for example. Even how was it going to water down how formal Chocolate Bespoke was going to be? So it led us to create a new brand called Kakao. And then in creating that new brand, Kakao, it's not a subsidiary of chocolate. No, it's a new baby.
Right.
So it has features that may look like it's bigger brother, but it's another child. And so how do we build its own DNA? How do we learn from the insights that we know? How do we look at global challenges and then be part of that? Most importantly, how then do we create a day-to-day solutions with day-to-day wear? So these are the questions we're asking. Went on the market, figured out a couple of things. Then climate change conversation came up. And we're like, Charlie, how do we play this? Because now, as soon as you go to like middle class, day-to-day, then you are part of the excesses. You are part of the challenges. Mm. So how do we go around it? I went to the factory one of the days, realized that our lady who was cleaning the place was sweeping away so much waste. The good news is the trash guys had not picked up trash for about 3-4 days. So I asked her, and she's like, oh, Bibri Krawi Treho. So I was like, let me go have a look. Sacks of offcuts that we're going to throw away on some trash or bin. So I said, no, bring it in. In another week, came up with different concepts that will help us repurpose a lot of these. And I'm like, okay, I can't just repurpose my contribution to the issues in the world that now I'm owning up to. How then do I then take this also a little bit further? So we started dipping our noses into the trash that comes into Abomloshi, old jeans, old school uniforms. Started appealing to old friends. Said, where's your old jeans? Bring it. You take it through a process, cut it out, recreate it, and use it for so many different things now. And today, you know, although the brand is less than 6-8 months, we have so much. There's so much focus on that brand. We've already started creating change.
Okay.
So many different artists we work with. Shout outs to my man Dante, who has been very instrumental in that arts, that arts bit of it. Not just dealing with waste, but we are also delving into villages and trying to poach people who started learning how to sew, but they never finished. People who are dormant, who are in a position to learn a thing or two about fashion and help us build this industrialization aspect of the business on a high level. Working with kids in different areas, villages that may have been forced by their parents to go and farm. If they are creatively inclined, how do we hone that aspect of what they do? You know, people with disability, they are not doing anything. Are we able to also empower them with the traits of two? Like, there's just so much that I realized that the cacao story can create. And so I take it very personal. It's such a personalized project and brand for me, because now through learning and through humbling ourselves to understand what situation is, how the world is now, how do we apply our know-how to create impact? How do we use our network? How do we use our influence to create more solutions for all the problems that are sitting here? So for me, we could have only gotten here.
Right.
But we can only get here because we listen.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Why do you think a lot of young Ghanaians fail to set up businesses and see that through?
Maybe, number one, maybe we are not hungry enough. A lot of people think, because I was born and bred in Nigeria, so it's the Nigeria fire in me. There might be an element of that in there. Well, shout out to Port Harcourt and Nigerian Jollof. But I think that we have it within us to be great. The total independence conversation in sub-Saharan Africa started from where? Started from Ghana. And there's so many other examples. You know, slave trade might be a negative example, but it started here. You know, so for me, we've always had it within us to be great.
But what is it? What is stopping us? What is making them?
Number one, maybe we are not hungry enough. Number two, maybe we don't have enough stories. You see, again, let me use this opportunity to big you up. You know, I wish I bought roses for you.
Well, you gave me a gift.
Okay, well, yes.
You gave me a gift.
So maybe an orange rose.
That's right.
Right, because what you are doing, my parents never got it. You know, like, we recently just got on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I saw that, man.
Yeah, and I was in awe.
Did you not cry?
I didn't know.
Did you not cry?
I cried about other things. I cried about other things, but not that one. And I'm saying this because, and I'm, you know, when I, you know, it was a crew, they came to shoot, did other stuff. But what I didn't know was they were going to sell the content to
Amazon,
Netflix or Amazon and Hulu and all these guys. And this is going to be there till my kids are how many years old? Today, there are documentaries that tell us how America was built and tells us about the Kennedys, the Ford, the Rockefellers. They were like you and I. Youth, they were like us. Literally. And sometimes the more you feed into even the stories and you begin to do your research. Like, for example, Starbucks. It took them 16 years to move out of Seattle before they started expanding. I recently finished The Shoe Dog. Like, you read the books, you watch the movies, like you go on Netflix, you type in playlist. That's a story on Spotify.
Mm.
You should see where the guy started from. So we have living examples. What I feel sometimes we lack is the storytelling. And the real storytelling, which focuses on both the pros and the cons.
Yeah.
That focuses on the realness. There are stages. I remember, last summer I was in London. A whole lot of stuff happened last year. And, I got to a point where it was a very down time. I was so emotional. And out of the blue, one of my very good friends sent me one of the videos that Steve Harvey posted. And it was on Family Feud. And I sat there and I was like, So why am I being emotional right now? Like, this is free art. Like, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Right? So we have great stories. We have great opportunities. Platforms like yours are going a long way to tell those stories. And they shouldn't just tell the story of the glam, the Harleys we are riding, the all these nice-to-haves. No. It should also talk about our downtimes, the loneliness conversation. You know, how awkward it is that people meet you on the streets and they think that you are good because you are meeting presidents, because you are making clothes for these guys. No. Who comforts the comforter? Charlie, it's like every time we are solving people's problems, who solves our problem? These need to be in books. These needs to be on Amazon, on the Netflixes, on the stuff. So that when people want to start businesses and they face a hitch, they just don't give up. So that means that they fed into the 99 reasons. Just like that.
You just hit me there, you know that. Who comforts the comfort?
Oh, Charlie.
That hit me.
See, so the storytelling, the real storytelling. And, I've made it my mission, because now there are a lot of production companies that I'm meeting. And I'm telling you, focus on the stories. Shout outs to, one of our chiefs, our biggest chiefs, actually, Mr. Prince Amoabing. Like, I was so Captain. Privileged. Yes, I was so privileged. We caught up 2 days ago.
Mm.
Like 2 hours. He even forgot he had a meeting.
Big up, Chairman.
Lovely man.
And Charlie, like, his story needs to be moved. Like, we need to watch it. And I don't know, when you get the chance, ask him what went wrong? What would you change?
I mean,
how can you?
He's been here once and I'm hoping to bring him back again.
I'm telling you, I finished two books, Richard Branson's two books. Masa, what people have gone through that, the youth just think, Charlie, yeah, let me just start something. Charlie, if this don't know the work, then they move to another one. Then they move to another one. Anybody's goats is nobody's goats. You'll be doing back, back, back till 70. Then you realize that you got nothing. So, going back to your question, being consistent and consistently moving, because the movement is success. The movement of it, that is the success, no?
You're on the process already.
Yes.
I mean, El Nightingale said it better. He says that success is the is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal.
Progressive.
Yeah.
As you said, the moment you stop, you get overtaken.
Yes.
Better still, the moment you stop, you die.
That's it.
You know, so personally, we have it in us to be great. You know, I live here. I stay here. Yes, I do get a chance to travel. Guys, when you get the chance, travel, form different perspective, meet people, be in a position to learn. But this is where we are. This is all we have, to be fair. And so sometimes when things are even going down, we learn. How do we not consider that the downside and only focus on the upside when we have dreams of building global businesses? You know, back in the day, you know, or even in Ghana, when you are given a job and then maybe you don't even deliver it, you tell someone's story, sorry, they forgive you, you have another chance to do it again.
Yep.
In Portugal, it's not like that. Do you understand? Yeah. If you don't learn to deal with the shortcomings, the setbacks, how do you deal with foreigners?
Yeah.
Especially when you find yourself in a foreign space.
Yeah.
So we should embrace the downturns and the downsides to things as much as we welcome
the success.
Yes.
Mm. I have an issue though, and this is a big issue.
Okay.
We have a lot of people who have been successful in this country and many parts of Africa. When you call them to have conversations, they don't want to talk. Why? People don't want to talk about their process.
Well, maybe another element that maybe was going to be my point too with why we don't do well or why we don't get to the high heights is the system. Okay, the system that we find ourselves. The system doesn't encourage businesses. So for instance, there are so many different conversations when it comes to tax breaks. There are so many designers and tailors like myself who maybe before they became big, the system should be in a position of sitting us down, have a way in which we can go around taxes, figure out accountants, have lawyers, things like this. The system is not like that. The lawyers want heavy premiums before they help the young entrepreneur. Same as the accountants. The system is also not helping the person. So what would the person do? For 20 years, they are one-man business. A whole 20 years. Because it's crazy. So if they are now going to add all these other stuff, then you might as well tell them not to start the business. You know? But when you have a system where, you know, even our banks, I won't even spare them. See how businesses are treated.
Businessmen are treated.
Even sometimes, like you look at your credit. Oh, it's a good credit and everything. When they're done with everything, they'll come and ask you for collateral, for even overdrafts. And now they say technically overdraft is a loan.
It's a loan. My God.
When I'm paying every month, when as soon as I picked it, I need to pay you. So it's tough. And for me, I think not a regret, but if I was supposed to go back and start everything again, one of the things I think I would love to focus on is structure. Structure. Because I believe that as bad as it gets, structure is needed. And for me, that's the most complicated aspect of business. Getting the structure right at the beginning.
Yes.
And so maybe, you know, and with a new crop of individuals and the younger ones now coming up, there's a much more bigger and better spirit with partnerships. And so you turn to not partner another designer, but you want to partner, let's say, someone who's good with numbers, someone who's good with operations. So we should learn that aspect of partnership, that sometimes it's not just about you. In fact, it's never about you. Warren Buffett,
Charlie Munger,
Phil Knight, Amancio Ortega, all of them have partners.
Yeah.
The more you delve into it, the more you realize that, oh, these are, it's a collaborative effort.
Yeah.
And so maybe we should start thinking about these more. That we should stop the idea of, oh, it's a me thing, it's me, because you want the fame, because you want the... No. If you have your priorities misplaced and it's the fame that you want, that's why you're doing what you do, you don't get far.
On the conversation of partnership, and I think I've said it several times, that every business that I have is in partnership with my business partner, who's also my best friend.
Uh-huh.
Now, very quickly, you know, when we started about 11 years ago, I realized I'm very good with people. I'm very good at negotiating. I'm very good at building the business, starting the business, you know, putting things in place to make sure that it's all going to work, develop the business. And he's very good at making sure it's working.
Mm-hmm. He's an operational person.
Operational person.
Day to day, yeah.
And I'm not very good at that. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I get bored.
Yeah.
So left me alone. The business would have crashed right now because I wouldn't be there.
But like me and you, we have a lot in common. But where's the alcohol? By now, we should be toasting and celebrating what is similar between us and things.
Yeah,
I'm like that.
Yeah. So it's helped me so much. And I remember a conversation in the car before we started. There was I think I was driving. My dad was in the front seat, and then his friend was at the back. And then you know, I was telling my dad what myself and Ed are going to be doing. And the man goes at the back. He goes, yeah, for me and for us, it's not the same. If you translate that into tree, you know what it means, yeah. Right? So he was basically trying to advise me to not do business with him.
Yeah, yeah. And I had the same.
Thank God I didn't listen.
Yeah, but you know, but again, I think that the idea of it is not wrong, but it's the who. It's the who. Because, you know, my parents had their own perspective on that. My first partnership I had with Chocolate, because Chocolate indeed started off as a partnership, and that went south. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible partnership.
I see.
Yes, 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 yes. Because the lady in question had her own studio, so I'm like, hey, this was before Wager, you know, and it wasn't the best. But again, I keep on saying, it's the who. So, you know, currently my partners with Junkies, for example,
fantastic.
Everyone is doing well. So it's not just about the word partnership. So because of partnership, this person is good at this. Technically, the person could be good at it.
Right.
But the person's human ethics might not align. So sometimes it's not, as I said, it's never about the word partnership. It's the who. Right. You know, you take a look at Junkies, for example. One of the biggest mistakes I think a lot of people make when it comes to partnership is they don't look at the who. Even like in my case, the achievements of your partner. You know, as I mentioned, Kwamina is doing very well, profiled on CNN, owns a drone company, works within the mind space, has his own business going. Maxwell, same thing, works in hospitality, real estate, entertainment. So then you realize that within our line of partnerships, nobody is greedy.
Mm.
Nobody is envious of each other. So you realize that we take specific decisions that go a long way in affecting the business.
Right.
Even it's the same principle when you're even hiring other people. And then another aspect of partnership is you team up with people who are good at what you are not good at.
100%.
Do you understand? And so you take a look at Maxwell. Maxwell is a chilled, like he's one of the most lovely people. He's like a teddy bear. But focus was nice guy, 6'3". But he's a very chilled person. So during certain types of encounters, certain line of disagreements with vendors, with stuff, you realize that he's a person who will be liaising because he's a soft touch to it. You know, you look at Kwame now when it comes to the numbers, you know, he's such a tech-savvy person. He's such a very smart numbers guy. He's always looking for a new type of business like that. You have someone like me who doesn't take no. Maybe the fourth thing I was going to tell you about me in terms of principle is I say no to no. You know, so, so, you know, anywhere there's a little gap, my feet is there.
Mm.
I will get there. Do you understand? So then you realize that there's so many different ways in which we fill each other and we complement each other, because one is, Max is going, this one, I'm not sure. I'm like, hey, we go do them. Next thing you know, we do it, goes like, yo, chocolate. Okay, good call.
Right.
Same thing. Sometimes when there's an issue, I'm like, no, I don't get it. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Next thing you know, he's like, okay, you relax, we'll figure it out. He goes, touches on it, realize that then you're Symbia and Charlie, you know. So we all complement ourselves in a very beautiful way. So we need to learn to understand these things, that in picking up a partner, you understand, we need to be circumspect. We need to be very intentional with not just the rules that a person is playing, but personally, the personal
who
bits.
They are.
Yes, who they are.
Mm.
You know, do they have integrity like you do? Do you understand? Do they understand? Do they have a similar principle when it comes to sacrifice? Will they be ready to do that? Because you can get to a T junction where, let's say, you are offered some crazy amount of money. Would you be ready to sacrifice for the bigger cause? If you guys don't align, one person will say that media may do no.
Right.
One person that you won't take the door. Next minute, you know, it brings tension, business collapse. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Our favorite question: motivation or discipline?
Kindly explain that.
So, which one has been a driving force in your process, motivation or discipline?
Wow. Hey. Imasa, you are a very wicked man. What's that? I think it's a good balance of both.
Okay.
It's a very good question. So I try to be disciplined. My parents instilled a lot of discipline in us. And so by default, I'm partly choleric as well.
Okay.
A lot of people see the sanguine in me, so they think I'm all play. No, I'm very much of a choleric as well. So the choleric in me was nurtured by my parents and the kind of home and the community I grew up in.
Okay.
So by default, I'm disciplined in some aspects.
Okay.
No matter how late I go to the clubs or however late I go anywhere, I could be leaving the clubs at 6 o'clock. Work starts at 8. I get home, shower, and I'm at work.
Wow.
Yes, the energy there is a different conversation.
Right.
But that is me. I wouldn't say that because I went out, give me 4 hours to recoup. No, if I know that I have a busy day and I still have to be out. You know, like, there's a story of one billionaire that came to Ghana. He runs like the Mest in East Ligon, you know, some partnerships there. And, you know, when I met him, we were here for some events and I was making clothes for him and his entire entourage. And, you know, but there was also that the need for me to hang and build a rapport with them.
Right.
So we had an event in the office in the afternoon, went for dinner in the evening, and all of them were like, hey, Squiku coming. He's Norwegian, but from Korea. You know, the night, and we're during dinner, they were like, yo, they want to go out. And they are told that I'm the king of Accra. I'm like, hey, Charlie, I beg you, relax. All right, let's go out. So I called up Eric Twist, and we went to Twist a couple of years ago. Yo, listen, they had the best time.
Mm.
We left the club at 4. And the following day, they needed their outfit for lunch. So whilst we were partying, we were thinking designs. As soon as I got what I wanted, I spoke to the team, quickly got the things together. Charlie, I got on my 5, nap for like 2 hours, went to the office, picked it up, called them. They were asleep. I'm like, as soon as they get up, let me know. They were staying, I think Marriott's one of them. So around like 12, I know lunch is around 2. 12, I went straight, finished up, went to sit at Marriott and waited for them.
Wow.
By the time they were up and thinking it wasn't possible, everything was sitting nicely on them. Like, we go, at what time did you sleep? At what time? And like, it's not about that. It's just about how focused and disciplined
I am.
But then again, there are so many other examples of that, you know, that shows you that I'm also working on other aspects of being disciplined.
Right.
So that's what we're looking at. Also, motivation. Chief, You'll be surprised how even your podcast motivates me. You'll be surprised how some of your panels, like the people you've brought on here, motivate and inspire me.
Right.
You'll be surprised how one of my workers, you know, she recently just got back to school. Shout out to you, Jifa. She's really one of my main sales ladies. She recently went back to school. Sometimes you think about how far she lives. The store opens at 9.
And she's there
by 8:30. How maybe one admin person stays in Community 25, almost Pram Pram Road. She gets to work before I do. And I'm 2 minutes away from my office. Such motivation.
Right.
You know, and of course, you know, other stories, what we've read, what we've done. So for me, it's a very difficult question.
Right.
But what I'm just saying is that I get motivated and inspired by everything around me.
Okay.
Everything around me. Like, I'm not picky about, because maybe people think that I've achieved more, so I'm not. No. Sometimes it's literally the person who for the past 8 years has dedicated himself and his family to make sure that your vision comes to life.
Wow.
I'm heavily motivated because anytime you think of quitting, they remind you that you are not doing. Who said it's about you? No. It's about the people that you told that you are building this huge empire. They are holding on to it because they know that in the next few years, you are building an over $1 billion enterprise. And so now their generation will be influenced. Now the janitor's kids will go to GIS. That's why every morning he's making sure that you have a clean office so that you can come and sit, cross your leg, and interview people.
No, that was good.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the most impactful conversations I've had. It's going to be... It's one of those ones where I'm thinking, Charlie, should I lock it up somewhere and feed on it for maybe about 6 months before I release it, before you guys get it? But I think what we'll do is that we'll release it first to the members of the club for about 2-3 days or even a week before it comes out to everybody else. Because I think there's a lot of things that we've covered here. And I want to thank you so much, for taking the time off your busy schedule. And as a matter of fact, I think you are the coolest guest I've ever had, man.
Oh, Charlie.
Charlie. Oh, Charlie. Look, the dude came in a... What's that called?
A Harley, man. Yeah, a Harley. Charlie, we worked, though. Yeah.
Beautiful. We worked.
Yeah, I've been biking since I was 14, so...
Right. Okay. Yeah. I need to learn. I need to learn, man. Anytime I say it, my wife is like, Charlie, you're going to die. But yeah. But thank you so much.
Thank
you guys for being here. You know, get your fingers, man. Type some comments. Let me know what you think about this conversation. How did it feel? How did you feel about it? Is it changing certain things in your mind? And if you made it to the end, I want to know the champions who made it all the way to the end. My name is Derek Abaite, and you're on Connected Minds. So stay connected.
Just before you end, please, the best comments that the club sort of picks will win a shirt from Kakao.
Whoa! Well, you heard it here. So people that don't make it to the end will never get to see this.
I know, right?